This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 82. In this episode, CJ and I are going to talk about the decisions and states traditional developers are in with SharePoint, SharePoint Online, and Office 365, recorded live June 10th, 2015. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good day, Mr. Johnson.
Yo.
How's it going, man?
Not bad, Mr. Connell.
It's a little bit different. We're recording in the afternoon. It's usually in the morning for both of us. So this is awkward.
Yeah, I sort of feel a little bit out of place. I don't really know what to say to you.
Good day.
That's why all I could come up with was... Yo.
How's it going, man?
Good, mate. Good. It's a beautiful sunny day up here in Redmond.
You guys got a sun installed?
Yeah, we got a sun installed. It's a pretty sweet one, too. It's the 3.2 edition of the sun. It's the one with a little more ultraviolet. Ah. A bit of tan. Yeah.
I got you. So it's a little bit of New Zealand sun there.
Oh, not quite that harsh. Not that harsh at all. For those of you who are listening that don't understand that comment, New Zealand's got very harsh sun. Like instead of the temperatures during the news and the weather section, they tell you the burn times. So they'll say it's only a 8-minute burn time or a 10-minute burn time instead of the typical stuff.
Tell people why that is.
Oh, that's because of all the chlorofluorocarbons you guys pumped into the ozone or destroyed the ozone a couple of decades ago. So there's a nice big ozone hole over in New Zealand. Apparently it's getting smaller though, I've heard. But I don't know. All I remember is as a kid, I could sit on the beach in New Zealand and I was pretty good. And then about teenage years, things got serious and everybody's taught there now to, when you go to the beach, you wear, you know, shorts, t-shirt and a big floppy hat and lots of sunscreen.
Mm.
It's bad news.
Not good. Not good.
No. How about you? What have you been up to?
It's been nice being home because I've been enjoying driving.
Oh, yeah. Hey, so you got a new car, right?
I did. I'm very excited. I guess kind of alluded to it a few weeks ago. But it's been fun because I got it. And then I got it on a Thursday.
How's the Hummerzine?
Say again?
How is the Hummerzine? Have you heard of Hummerzines?
I haven't.
You know the stretched Hummers in Vegas? Oh, that's what. Oh, sorry. I thought that's what you got.
Oh God, no, no. I am the proud owner and excited owner of a Tesla Model S.
Woohoo! Yeah. Very smooth. So, very smooth.
For those tracking at home, the 85D, not the crazy one with the insane button.
Yeah, because Teslas aren't insane enough, of course. Right.
That's the thing is I can't. I slam on the gas. Well, sorry, not the gas. I slam on the accelerator, and the shot that you get with that is it's enough to surprise the heck out of you, and you're like, how in the world is there something faster than this?
How's your range anxiety?
It's fine. It's not that bad. It's funny because the car's got a range of 260 miles. Well, at least that's what what do you call it? The guesstimator?
The guessometer.
Yeah, the guessometer. So it's got a range of about 260. I've gotten it down below 100. My wife, when I was gone, she went, I got the car on a Thursday, and then on Friday morning, I had to leave to go to Boston for a week. And so I couldn't drive it. This thing I've been waiting forever on. She got to drive it, and all I could do was, it's got an app on your phone. I can watch it on my phone, and I can see where it is. I can unlock it, turn the air on, all that kind of stuff. And, it was crazy because I'd sit there and I was watching her drive, and I see the first day she goes out in it, she goes from where we live all the way up to Georgia and then back down home. And I'm watching her coming home to the point to where she's pulling in the driveway. And when I see the car going to park and it's got 31 miles left, I send her a text and I'm like, wow, you really, because I remember you and I talked about this, that it's like best thing is just to burn it up and go all the way down. Just like you're terrified of snakes, get thrown in the snakes.
Exactly, yeah. It's the best way to get through it.
So I text her. I'm like, you took CJ way too early at his word. I'm not even in town. You actually had the guts to do that one.
That's awesome. You got to blow those cobwebs out for sure. Get a good range test. Nice work.
I'll tell you what, man. It is by far the most fun thing I have ever driven.
Have you found the Ethernet port yet?
Oh, God, I wish.
You know, it runs like an onboard... like TCP/IP based Ethernet network, and people have figured out that there's some little jacks you can wire into, and and you can get on the Ethernet network. It's pretty sweet.
So there's a way. I've jumped on a few forums to where you could see how people have gone in and they've sideloaded a few things into it, but it kills the warranty. And
yeah, probably not a smart move until they sort of open it up a little more officially, perhaps.
I was warned that you should not tie more than two devices to the account to check on the car. So my wife's got it. She's got the app, and I've got the app both on our phones to where we can both get into it. We can check on different things or configure stuff. And they warned me, they said, don't do any more than that because it actually monitors that. It doesn't go straight to the car. It actually goes through Tesla and they monitor it. And if there are more than two, then you're flagged and you could they could lock all of your accounts out and you gotta chat on it because it thinks it's like a hacking thing. So there's a project on GitHub that someone pointed me to. It's a Node.js project where you can pull down a lot of data about the car. And I am so tempted to run that thing, but I'm terrified to brick myself out of the app. So
yeah, you probably don't want to do that. I bet they've got a way you could fix that up, but they've got the greatest customer service on the planet. So I was just plugging into the Ethernet port of my car and I managed to brick it by mistake. I tried to upgrade it to iOS 8.3.
It's fun, man. It's strange because you get people that come up next to you and that have just, I've never been in a car was like this. Or I've never had a car that's like this. People come up next to me and they're like, they try and race. And so I've had to race I enjoyed racing a Mercedes SLS, which is a $230,000.
Yeah, you would have whopped him.
Oh, I beat the crap out of them.
Yeah, there's not much that beats a Tesla these days.
No.
In terms of just raw acceleration, right? Because they're super torquey because of the engine, the electric engine.
We have a family friend that's got a family friend of a friend that's got a Ferrari 430, and he found out that we got it, and he's like, I challenge you to a jump off the line. I'm like, this will be fun. Let's go.
Nice. You know, somebody should write an app that plugs into that API and pulls the data down. And then logs trips into your calendar in Office 365. You know, for work purposes, you could use it for, you could put in, when you started the trip, when you stopped the trip, how many miles you traveled, and then, you could hook it up for expense claim purposes.
I totally want to do
get a vehicle logs.
I'm in a forum and I'm asking you about this whole thing about do you get locked out? Is it real? Because I'm thinking about a fun little project that involves a Raspberry Pi that's powered off the USB port in there that, through the Wi-Fi with the Azure, with Office 365 and everything. So,
oh, so cool.
It's fun, man. It's a lot of fun. It's everything and more. I was not let down at all. So it's good stuff.
Nice. Hey, I've got before we kick off the main body of the podcast, I've got a quick shout out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I met up with a young lady yesterday by the name of Deepsha, who works at Microsoft, who's a MBA intern in the Azure team, in fact. And she's a listener of the podcast. And so she's interning at Microsoft. She looked me up in the global address list and finally figured out which Chris Johnson it was and reached out and said, do you want to catch up? I'm a fan of the show and be cool to say hi. So we met up yesterday and for a coffee and hung out and talked about the show and talked about cloud and all sorts of goodness. And it was pretty cool. It was nice to see a fan of the show and also one that happened to be working at Microsoft. So
there you go.
Shout out to Deepsha.
Did she happen to, when she heard you say something, she's like, oh, I thought you were the cool one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I did a couple of times say, no, AC's the famous one.
Oh, whatever. Come on.
Anyway, it was really fun to meet up with a fan. So, yeah, really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess we should probably do an episode here instead of just shooting the breeze the whole time. What do you think?
Possibly a good idea. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so this week I've had this question come up a bunch. The question come up a bunch to me, both over email, a couple times over Twitter, really since the Build conference. And it came up also, I'm involved in an event this week. IT Unity is doing an online conference, and I was on a developer panel yesterday with Bob German, Ted Pattison, Scott Hillier, Todd Baginski. And we had this question come up. And so I thought it'd be a good thing to talk about this week. The topic that we're going to go over here is that, back when we started hearing about Office 365 going to SharePoint, SharePoint going to Office 365 and becoming a much bigger deal, the first thing I think that we all said, at least until you mentioned this, it didn't occur to me that this is exactly the way I had remembered it, was that we all saw and looked at the IT pros jobs and said, God, you guys are the responsible for feeding and watering the servers. How is the cloud going to impact you? But what nobody really talked about until it seems really right now is, how is it going to impact developers' jobs?
Yeah, yeah.
Because the IT pro one, it makes sense. But the developer one, it wasn't as clear until I think a little more recently.
Yeah, it seems to be like when the cloud started becoming a big deal, and the first thing was, you know, taking away the need for feeding and watering servers, right? And so I think that's just what everybody talked about first up. And so IT pros just, you know, pardon my French, but just shit themselves and were like, I'm out of a job. Oh my goodness. And the sky's falling. And they were running around like headless chickens, wondering what they were going to do and thinking they were going to be done out of a job. And that has not transpired, as it turns out.
Yeah.
You know, you can imagine their jobs have changed, sure, but they're certainly, and have some good evidence of this, that they haven't all lost their jobs, right? We know lots of them that...
I don't know any of them that have lost their jobs.
There you go. Right, that's my evidence. Weak, I know, but anyway. but yeah, I think it's fair to say that their jobs have changed, right? And so I think that has transpired over the last few years. And I think we're at a point where they're less concerned about their jobs entirely disappearing now. Mm. And they're getting more comfortable. So like things like... You know, back then they were worried about it because they were the ones doing all the networking, all the server maintenance, all the backup stuff, all of the, you know, all of the really hardcore infrastructure-y things that they were used to doing. Mm. And now they're really focused on a bunch of different things. You know, they still have to deal with networking and servers and backups and all that stuff too. A lot of it's just virtualized, but now they're focusing on things like, how do I do my hybrid configurations? How am I going to live in this hybrid world for the next few years? How do I deal with cloud security and governance, compliance, and management of data and identity and things like that? And, you know, so they're focused on a bunch of different problems now. But I think it's fair to say that their jobs have changed, but haven't gone away.
Yeah. And, you know, in a sense, I would think, first of all, I think it's affected all of our jobs, and it's affected all of our jobs equally. I think that, if anything, it's made us more valuable to most companies because it's helping understand kind of where things fit. Where do they fit on-prem? Where do they fit in the cloud? Where do they fit in hybrid scenarios? Where do they not fit at all? And where do they as a company, where do they fit? Where does it make the most sense for this company? Can they actually work in on-prem? Can they continue to work on-prem? Can they move to Office 365 or SharePoint Online? Or do they go with like an IaaS hosted offering where they put everything in the cloud, or they go to someone like a Rackspace that helps them, does the management of their servers, but they still get some of the benefits of the cloud? So
I sort of see it like, you know, lots of companies used outsources for literally running data centers, doing all the power and all that sort of stuff, maintenance and things like that. But the company still had an IT department, and they helped, you know, design, architect, deploy, iterate on their infrastructure requirements with those outsources and things. And it seems like just the next logical step of that progression to me.
I agree. And so when it's been obvious that, you know, that we've got some stuff going on. A lot of the questions that when they first came out were all centered around IT pros. But, you know, what we wanted to talk about today was a little bit more about developers. And one of the things that I've seen, or one of the questions I see keep coming up, there's a couple questions, and a lot of it was really shown in this panel that we did this week. You see one question, we'll tackle this in three different ways, but the things I kept seeing come up were, first was someone saying, do I have to move? I'm a developer. Can I continue to stay on-prem, or do I have to go to Office 365, or do I have to at least know about all the stuff that's going on? That's one. Another one is that people look at it and they complain about, man, the pace of change is just so damn fast. And it's just, all the stuff that's coming out, this new stuff that keeps coming out, I mean, how are you supposed to keep up and da da da? So I've got some thoughts on that. But the other one that people had was that, okay, so what should I be investing my time in?
Yeah.
What kinds of things should I be paying attention to? And just where does it sit for me? So I thought that, you know, we could take a little bit of time here. We can try and, you know, just kind of riff on a few of these things. So the first one, the first piece that we kind of, we'll go into three different things. One is, who moved my cheese is the first one we call it.
Yep.
The second one is, how do I change / I'm ready? Where do I start? What's my playbook? And then the third piece was the classic quote of people saying, the pace of change or the pace of innovation is just too damn fast. I can't keep up. How do you handle it?
Yeah.
So let's start with who moved my cheese.
Yeah. So this one is all about, in a nutshell, it's about humans not being very good about change in their lives, right? If you think about, for all the parents listening, we'll fully understand this, right? When you have kids and you have babies, there are two types of parents. There's one type of parent that is cool with like letting their kids sleep on the floor of the car or at the under the table of a restaurant when you're out eating late at night or whatever, and they just go with the flow, mm-hmm. right? And then there's the other kind of parent, which is more schedule driven, and they understand like their kids behave best when they're in bed at night, at the same time every night, get up at the same time, they're on the same sort of schedule, there's routine and all that sort of stuff. And by far and away, I think the latter is the more popular sort of mode of operation for parents. And I think that just goes back to the basics of, as humans, we're fundamentally not very good at dealing with change, and we feel very comfortable when we're in routines and we know what's coming. And so I think this is sort of the same with developers, right? People don't necessarily like being told, oh, by the way, now we've got to do things totally differently.
Yeah, I think it's specifically applicable to developers, because I think that developers traditionally, developers like things black and white. There's not much gray with developers. I mean, it either works or it doesn't work. It doesn't kind of work. I mean, it either does or it doesn't. Kind of work means it's not working right now. It worked before and it doesn't work. It'll work next time, but yep. It doesn't work right now. So it's how do you deal with this? So some people look at this and they get frustrated with, you know what? Do I have to change? Do I have to keep? I've been a traditional SharePoint on-prem developer. Can I continue to do that? And you know, I've been at four different community events in the last month and a half between Build, Ignite. I was at Dev Intersections out in Phoenix and at an event, SharePoint Saturday event in Atlanta. And then last week, I actually taught a class for Critical Path Training in Boston, a private class. And, you know, it's really funny to see the cross-section of the different people that you have there. I mean, from Build, you saw a ton of people were like, cloud, cloud, cloud. No one cared. I didn't get a single question about on-prem. But when I go to Ignite, it was
more of a mixture.
It was more of a mix, but it was heavy cloud. The SharePoint Saturday that I went to, I didn't really get a really good bead on either way, but I could tell that it was still more of an on-prem crowd. But then the event that I went to the class that I taught in Boston, it was by far and away, everything was on-prem.
Yeah.
I was pretty surprised by it. I mean, there was a bunch of customers or a lot of companies that were there between defense and government. It makes sense. But I was really surprised that the overwhelming thing, I could almost completely ignore all of the, hey, it works like this in Office 365, all of those little tangents that I have kind of in my back pocket when I teach, I didn't have to pull any of those things out. And it was really awkward. So you've got a real cross-section of where people are. Some people are just like, can I continue to stay on-prem and ignore all this other stuff? And the answer is absolutely, you can.
Yeah.
You don't have to adopt this new stuff. You don't have to pay attention to it. It's just that I think that what confuses people or what scares people is that, hey, there's not a lot of talk for developers on what's new with SharePoint 2016. There's not a lot of talk about it at Ignite. It was all about what's new with IT Pro and deployment.
Yeah.
And I think that's what scares some people.
No, I think you're right. And when I talk to people about this, I sort of let them know there is nothing wrong with sticking with doing what you know now and continuing that. What the important part is that you have to understand is how long your runway is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the bit that's up for debate, which means, and by that I mean, like, I think we all know the world's going to change, right? The only thing that's constant is change, right? Everything's changing, right? You and I are speaking over Skype. That didn't exist, you know, a bunch of years ago. That's change.
Deep thoughts by CJ. Yep.
So things are going to change, right? Regardless of whether you want them to or not. And then it's just a matter of how you cope with that and when you choose to change as well. And so when it comes to development in on-prem and in the cloud, like you know, you've got a good, decent amount of runway before you're dead and buried with no job, right? Mm-hmm. It's probably like, I'd say, a good 10 to 12, maybe 15 years of there will still be SharePoint servers, I guarantee it, on premises in 10 years time, without a shadow of a doubt, right? There's note servers on prem to this day, right? And so that's a really long runway. But the deal is like eventually you're going to hit the end of that runway, and you got to make a decision: is that runway in 3 years' time, 5 years' time, 10 years' time, or 15? I actually think it's probably in the SharePoint space, probably in the 8 to 10 year time frame, is like when that thing like literally ends and you walk off the end into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're cool to continue on doing the same thing you have been for the last few years for another 5 years. No problem at all. But just know that at some point, if you're going to want to continue on past the end of that runway, you better be taking flight with a new technology.
Yeah. And as with any technology, it becomes more and more of a commodity. So you've got, you know, is it easier to find guys that are doing notes? I don't want to really equate SharePoint to notes, right?
Because it becomes a commodity, and then it becomes not a commodity.
Yeah. It's right. First, it's a hot thing, then it becomes a commodity, and then it's a novelty.
Archaeological dig to find them.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not to say, I don't want people to mistake what we're trying to say here, is that I don't expect something like, I don't want to compare something like SharePoint to notes. I use the notes analogy only because to kind of take it to the logical conclusion or logical extreme of just like, look, notes didn't go anywhere. And it is a platform now that has a significant challenges, and it hemorrhages users all the time. And the majority of the reasons that we see people renewing their licenses for notes is because they can't get off of it fast enough. That all the companies I've interacted with, that's what my experience is. And I know that that's not 100%, but that's a good number of them. But it is a good business to be in. There will be on-prem work that is 100% on-prem work. There will be that kind of work for a very long time.
Absolutely.
Very, very long time. And you don't have to, even I'll go on the more conservative thing or more aggressive number, at least for the next 5 years. There's no way in the world that if you're a developer, if you're a younger developer, like let's say you're a developer that is, you know, that's been doing this for the last 10, 15, 20, 30 years, right? I think that the one you can look back at your career, look back 5 years from today, 5 years in the past, could you have said where you are right now 5 years ago, 3 years ago? I can't even say it for 2 years ago.
No way.
So to me, it just seems like, you know, people look at it and say, yeah, but I've got like 5 years for this. Really? Are you really going to try and plan that far out? Because so much is going to change. It's a fool's errand.
I think as a developer, if anybody asks you, what are you going to be doing in 5 years' time? You're just lying through your teeth if you've got a good idea of what you'll be doing.
If you have any specifics and come out of your mouth, you absolutely are. I think if you want to talk like big strokes, that's one thing. But
oh, sure. Yeah. Goals, that's different, yeah. Right? But what you'll actually be doing. So yeah, I think plenty of runway. But also, I guess the good thing here is we're only talking about the on-prem stuff, right? And there's a good deal of opportunity for people that have built a career around building stuff for SharePoint on-premises or other pieces of the Office and SharePoint and Exchange puzzle. There's plenty of transferable skills to doing those, solving those same kind of problems, but in Office 365 too.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, from there you could take those skills and you could apply them to hybrid, which is a new area of growth, but it still is very close to what you're doing, and there's a little bit of new stuff. And that to me, I mean, just look at the emphasis that Microsoft has made around hybrid, around Service Pack 1 for SharePoint 2013, and then from Ignite and seeing all the emphasis around SharePoint 2016,
yeah.
The emphasis around hybrid, that's a niche, not niche in the sense of it's a small market, but that is that's niching yourself down and saying I'm an expert at hybrid. That's going to be a skill set that's going to be really, really valuable in the next 2 years. I mean, it already is today.
Absolutely. So there you go. That's like running to the end of the runway and sort of extending it for another 5 to 8 years.
Mm-hmm. It's wading in. It's like kind of going into the pool on one of those zero entry kind of things.
I agree.
Okay, so I think that's like a who moved my cheese. Let's talk about someone who looks at this and says, "What if I want to change? How do I change? I'm ready. Where do I start? What's my playbook look like?"
Yeah, this is a tricky problem because there's a few ways to approach it. I think, right? There's the folks that don't have the opportunity to do new types of projects today, and then there's those that do. And so we've probably got some tips and tricks for both of those categories of folks.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, I get this question a lot. People look at me and they say, how much on-prem work versus Office 365 or cloud work do you do? And to be honest, I do no on-prem work. And they're like, really? It all comes to you as just all Office 365 work. It's like, well, to be honest, I turn down all of the on-prem work because there's enough Office 365 work that's out there. It's not that there is not on-prem work that's out there. It's just that I've decided that I want to make my focus Office 365. Now, why did I make that? Why do I make that decision? I've made that decision for two reasons. Number one, I do see that's where this business is going. I see it is going in Office 365. I see that's where the innovation is happening. I see that's where all the new stuff is happening first. That's the cutting edge kind of spot. That's where stuff is going over there. There's three reasons. So that's where everything's going. That's one. That's reason number one. Reason number two, to be quite honest, I do this stuff because it puts food on the table. And this is where a lot of the interest is. This is where the news is. This is where the media is paying attention. This is where Microsoft's attention is. This is where people want to read blog posts and stuff. So I look at it from a selfish business point of view. The third piece, though, that I think is one of the most important pieces and that a lot of people kind of overlook is that me personally, I do this type of work, this development work, because I like the change. I like the newness. I like the innovation that happens. I love the fact that this pace is going so blazingly fast right now. And so for me, I like jumping in and saying, hey, look, there's what's new and here's what I can pay attention to. And I can't do that if I'm on-prem. I feel like I'm still waiting around every 3 years. This way, this is the reason I've kind of chosen this approach here. So this is why I've gone that way. You have to, for each person you talk to about this, I think you have to understand what are their motivations for doing it.
Yeah.
A big motivation for mine is I like the newness of it, and that's where I'm going to it.
So playing devil's advocate for a second, there'll probably be some listeners who go, that's great, AC, you do have the choice, but I'm stuck at large, nameless, boring organization XYZ, and I kind of like the stability of my job and the company I work for and the area that I live in and all that, but I don't get to choose what technology we use. So what are some tips that you got on for folks that are for the foreseeable future are going to be doing stuff on premises with current in-market technology that you think that they could be either taking a look at or getting involved in that would help them continue to learn at the same time and start getting ready for the change when it comes, but you know, knowing that they're going to be using the current in-market stuff for a little while yet.
Okay, so I'm going to massage the question a little bit because it's easier for me to answer.
Take liberties, my friend.
Yeah, I'll just be honest about it. So I see this. There's two classifications of people that fall into this. There's the person that you described that said, you know what? I like my full-time job. I like where I am. I like the stability. I like the healthcare. I like all the stuff that I have with this. I like where I live. I know that I'm safe in the job that I'm in and I don't have to worry so much about it. But I don't want to feel like I have to like quit my job to go do this kind of new stuff. And that's great that you can go do that stuff. That's one thing that we have to kind of look at there. Okay, so let's just, to that person, this is simply just a lifestyle choice, right? I had that same job before. And to me, I would do that job for a year or two, and then I'd get just ants in my pants and say, I got to go do something else. I've been there, done that. I checked that off. The next piece isn't as much. It's a variation on the next project, but I feel like I've already done this and I don't really know what else to do. So there's nothing else to learn. That's not the way my brain is wired. And so I decided to say, you know what, fine. The best way for me to do this is not to take the work that someone else tells me to take. It's to take the work that I want to take. And the best way to do that was just to go independent. And so that's why I went independent. But if you don't want to make that, I take a huge risk by doing that. I've gone 3 months without a paycheck, right? But it's a risk that I take. It's a quality of life thing that for me is what I needed. So I think you have to look at it from that one point of view. But let's switch over and go back to what your question was. And the other person that says, I am in this stable job. I don't want to quit my job and do this stuff, but I want the best of both worlds. I want to play with the new stuff. The cool thing about where we are today is that if you go back 5 years and someone said, I want to get into SharePoint, but I just do ASP.NET. How do I get into SharePoint? And I'm like, look, so this kind of sucks, but here's the deal. You're going to have a powerful machine that has 16 to 32 gigs of RAM minimum that you can fire up a virtual machine. You get an MSDN license with Windows and you put SQL on it and all this other stuff. So you probably want to have MSDN subscription. And they're looking at this like, Jesus Christ, this is going to be a $10,000 investment just for the hardware and the software just to be able to play.
It's a high barrier of entry. Yeah,
it really was. But today, what does it look like now? I mean, today you can sit there with Office 365. You guys have set up this developer program that you can get signed up and basically get a tenant for free for a year, which is a very good value.
Yep.
Even if you don't do that, I mean, I create a new trial tenant once a month and then throw it away and then create another trial tenant once a month that I use for my presentations and stuff. So I don't have to host anything, is what I'm saying. I could go for as little as $5 a month to get a small license to Office 365. I could use the $0 option with the developer program. I could have trial accounts. If I had MSDN, I could set that up. The point being, the barrier to entry is so low that there's all you need is really just an internet browser and an internet connection. That's it. You don't even need Visual Studio. You don't even need Windows. You can take anything that you have right now, you can start building with it. So the barrier to entry is so low. What kind of stuff do you need to do? How do you start taking advantage of this? To me, you want to focus on the core technologies that all the stuff is based on. You need to be strong with all the standard web stuff, HTML, CSS, JavaScript. But the next piece is that I think is really important. The two pieces are understanding how to work with services. So this whole client over HTTP model, specifically RESTful services, you really need to be familiar with how they work, how to make requests, how to customize the requests, how to massage them, how to use tools like Fiddler. That stuff is really big. The other thing that I think you really need to understand is this whole authentication piece, the whole OAuth model and app model and all that stuff. Let's just focus on the authentication piece and authorization.
Yeah.
That's a big piece. And the cool thing is that of all the things I just mentioned, not a single one of those things is SharePoint, Azure, Microsoft specific. It is industry standard kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So there's tons of resources that are out there of stuff that you need to get ramped up on. From there, the amount of free training that's out there, of course, I'd like for you to pay for the training that I put out there, but the amount of free training that's out there that you guys put out on the Microsoft Virtual Academy and all the samples that the Azure team and the Office Dev team that you guys put out on GitHub, there's a tremendous amount of samples and labs on walking you through getting ready in different areas. It's the thing that people need to do after getting the different technologies, starting to really get a good grasp of the different technologies and the different things that are out there, is I got laughed at when I said this on the call on our panel the other day, but I think it really does strike true to me. We've been doing SharePoint for a long time, and everyone would say, how do you get to be a SharePoint expert? And they think they have to learn everything. And I was always like, look, you don't. I still don't know crap about business intelligence with SharePoint. I barely know a little. I know a little bit about ECM, but not a ton. There's specific areas that I know a ton about, but there's a lot of areas I'm just like, I know about it, but I don't know it deep. You need to look at everything we have in Azure and in Office 365 today as the buffet at the restaurant.
You're not going to eat it all, are you, AC?
You're not going to eat it all. And there's some things you definitely want to stay away from, like don't eat the ribs that have been there all afternoon. You want to be careful. You want to sit there and look and say, like, I'm going to fill up my plate. I can't fill up my tray with everything. So, you know, if you're trying to...
Be selective,
yeah. Pick a project and just say, what can I go through and start working with in this project? What technologies can I work with? And then go a little academic with it. Say, well, let me try and force this one tech. Let me force this to be a single page app, and I'm gonna force Angular to be in here. Why did you use Angular? I just wanted to use Angular. You have no business reason? Absolutely none at all. I just wanted to use it. By all means, go for it. Get a feel for it.
I got a good idea for folks. If you are stuck in, at least I think it's a great idea, but it's mine, so I would. But if you're stuck in an organization that is not looking at Office 365 or is not looking at any cloud technologies, then think about what you could do outside of work as well. If you're really desperate to do one of these projects, you really want to start, you know, building that muscle outside of your day job, there's lots of organizations that want your help. Look for things like charitable organizations that you could donate some time to. Loads of those folks use Office 365. Hell, you could go move them to Office 365 if you wanted, right? Often they've got terrible IT tools. They have no budget to spend on big IT projects or IT projects and things because they're off doing good in the world, right? And so you can donate time and effort outside of your work to go do a project for somebody like that, right? Build them a website, you know, learn Angular that way. Go do some SharePoint customization for them in Office 365 for their intranet or team sites or what have you, and go donate some time. There is, most people don't think they have any time in their lives, until they jam something else in and make it work. I find unless I hold myself accountable to it and put something on my plate, it won't happen. Right. So give it a shot.
Yeah, you got to give yourself a deadline. You know, it's funny you say that too, because I mean, it's not only trying to find different organizations that are out there, like and charitable stuff. There are different hackathons that are out there that actually do a really good job looking to the community. There was the one that was at right before Ignite that Andrew Clark and company put on, Chicago's Next. They took ideas from the community of like social projects, and people picked the different social projects, and their hackathon idea was to go build out that thing for free, like one for, you know, kind of like an Uber for elderly people who needed to go to who live in nursing homes and need to go to the store or go run errands and stuff, and they needed people to drive them around.
Yeah.
Go to the site. There, it used to be called Odesk and Elance. There's a site now called Upwork. Go there and look for people who are trying to find just people to do to find developers to build things out for them. And be straight up. Don't sit there and try and say I do this full time. Say I have a full time job and I'm looking for some side work here. You pick it up and you're very honest and say I need somebody for like 4 hours. I've hired people in the U.S. and all over the world that say I'm just looking for about 5 to 10 hours a week and I'm trying to learn this stuff. I'm like, you know what? That's a great way to do it. And you'll earn some money doing it as well.
Yeah. I mean, the way I got into phone programming was not because I got a job programming phones, right? It was because I had a personal need to want a TripIt client for Windows Phone. And so I just thought, hey, I wonder how easy or hard this is and got started that way.
Yeah. I mean, look around. When I got the windows on my car tinted earlier this week. The lady, I was like, I couldn't remember what I did last time I was here. And it had been 5 years since I had the windows tinted in the car. And she went through and she's like, what's your number? She was searching through their Gmail account for all the stuff that they had done because they send themselves an email with the invoice and found my records from like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and 10 years ago. I went to the same place all three times and found exactly what I had done. And I'm looking at this like, is that how you keep your records? And she's like, oh yeah, Gmail, it's got a great backup. And I'm like, I sat there and I talked to the owner about Office 365, just shooting the breeze for 2 hours. Guy gave me the whole like front windshield tent for free.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're actually thinking about switching over to 365. But
nice. Make it so, my friend. Make it so.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the job that I wanted, but I'm hooking him up with a friend of mine who's trying to do some side work on it. So it's like, it's working out perfect.
Oh, sweet. There you go. That's a perfect example.
Yeah. So just open your eyes, look around. There's opportunities that are out there. To me, focus on the core technologies, the core web technologies, especially get the OAuth and the rest in REST. Get that down. That is OAuth. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, I understand it. Like, no, start really playing with it and really get in there. I thought I knew it. I taught OAuth for a year before I really understood it. The people that were in my classes for the first year, I was trying to get, I could repeat what I had been told, but I did not understand what I was saying. I was hoping all the time, please don't ask a question right here because this is a one lane road right here. I can't go off this path right now.
Yeah, it's not choose your own adventure, buddy. It's stay on my path. Yeah, no, that's definitely the right way to start. Start picking some of the core technologies to focus on, then start looking for innovative opportunities to start building that muscle up, whether that be a personal project, doing something in social circles or, you know, charitable circles or whatever, or also looking in your own organization, right? Maybe approach that SharePoint customization next time slightly differently and use a bit more JavaScript.
Yeah, force yourself to learn a new technology. I mean, that's how I got into Node. I was like, you know what? Screw it. This Node thing is a big deal. Let me try it out. I did it. I really liked it. So
yeah, nice.
So the last thing that we wanted to touch on here was people that say, my God, the stuff is going so fast. There's so much new stuff. How are you supposed to keep up with everything?
You know, this terrifies me. Here's a confession. As a developer, like I think of myself as a developer, even though I don't develop every day, I still feel like at my core, I'm a developer. And I look at the JavaScript world in particular, and it freaks me out, right? Because I sit there and I think, if I start a project and I'm going to use this framework, and then the new cool thing is a bit different and there's this other framework that comes out, I've made the wrong choice. It's like waiting for the next greatest laptop, right? It's that old technological or techie problem of betting on something and then it being the uncool thing.
This is the exact discussion that came up yesterday, which is how do you pick something, right? How do you, with all the stuff that's coming out, how do you first stay on top of it? How do you actually be aware of all of these different libraries and all the stuff that's going on? And then how do you pick it? So for me, you know, I think that we're seeing a lot of JavaScript libraries explode right now. We're not seeing this in all the different managed libraries or like C# or Java or anything like that. I think it's much more common with JavaScript. And to me, the reason why that is because it is the one thing, it is the one technology that there's no dependency. If someone does a JavaScript library, when I grab that script, I don't care if that person has the proverbial hit by the bus thing where that person that wrote the library is gone. That library, it's not compiled, it's open, I can look at the code and I can use it, and it doesn't matter if things change with it in the future or if it stays the way it is. It's like the whole thing that's going on with Angular right now. Yeah. We're at 1.x, people are flipping out about 2.0. It's like, is it gonna be good, is it gonna be bad or whatever? It's like, it doesn't matter. You can stay on 1.3 if you want from here on out as far as you go, because it's still there. Nothing is gonna force it to change between now and you know, 1,000 years from now. JavaScript is the most common runtime. The JavaScript runtime is the most common runtime you will find on all devices, between phones, laptops, servers, desktops, Raspberry Pis, watches, everywhere. It is the most common runtime that's out there. So to me, that's why it's blowing up so much. So people have to look and they say, well, how do you stay aware of the stuff that's going on? How do you do that?
Yeah. A good example of how I do that is podcasts, right? I listen to the .NET Rocks podcast. They cover all sorts of interesting stuff going on in the .NET world, but also in other technologies, right? One I listened to the other day was talking about this exact problem with JavaScript frameworks. And the guest they had on, I forget his name, but he was talking about TypeScript and how that has helped. He didn't say this in these exact words, but here's how I interpreted it. He's addressed some of this concern through using TypeScript, because he's able to write stuff and annotate stuff in TypeScript world and taking advantage of like the latest and greatest language features in JavaScript, and know that he can transpile, is that the right word?
Yep.
I don't know what the right word is. Transpile down to the current JavaScript runtime version that is most common and prevalent in all browsers. So he doesn't have to necessarily wait for a particular feature to make it to, you know, IE10 or something. Mm-hmm. He can write in TypeScript and annotate and use latest language features of ECMAScript 6 or whatever the thing's called, and
yep,
transpile
that's right.
down for current browsers. And that sort of resonated with me as quite an interesting way to take some of this pain away of feeling like you're always one step behind.
That's one of my most favorite aspects of TypeScript, is that I feel like I'm coding for tomorrow, but I'm doing it today and I don't have to wait for tomorrow.
Yeah, the way you described it is a really interesting stepping stone between a C# programmer and a JavaScript programmer, where it gives you a bunch of nice little stepping stones along the way to make you feel a little more comfy and a little more at home. And the other thing he said, which was fascinating, is that the way that the new JavaScript language definitions are going, it's becoming more and more C#-esque, mm-hmm. right? They're talking about adding async and await to JavaScript and stuff. Like, mm-hmm. whoa! So, and actually, if I wait long enough, yeah. JavaScript's just going to be C# anyway.
Async. It's funny, async and await are talked about for, they're on the table for ECMAScript 7 or ECMAScript 8. But the one for ECMAScript 7, that is like a year or two before the spec is even voted on, but they're talking about having that in TypeScript by TypeScript 2.0, which Anders said at Build that was going to be later in the fourth quarter of this year. So
right.
I think, to me, the pace is too fast, but just keep in mind, you don't have to pay attention, or you say the pace is too fast, it is fast, but you don't have to watch every single thing that's going on.
No, it's great. It's great. It's definitely a fun and exciting time to be part of. So I guess your lesson learned is you don't have to be on every train. You just got to you got to know which ones you want to learn more about and just let the rest ride past.
Cool, man.
Cool.
All right, we'll do it again next week.
Cheers, AC.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com. where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.